How is everybody? Good? All right. Time set for docket number 88615. Do you wish to retain any time for rebuttal? 5 minutes? Okay. As both sides know, your first 2 minutes are uninterrupted time, so use that as you please, and you can get started as soon as you're ready, counsel.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Greg Cloward on behalf of appellant. The state engineer. I'm splitting time today with Mr. Harima, who represents Albemarle in this appeal. We've planned on having me address the legal standard for considering an application for an extension of time to prove beneficial use, and have Mr. Harima discuss the substantial evidence question. That's obviously a tentative plan. I welcome any questions the court may have for me. The question before the court is whether substantial evidence supports the state engineer's decision to grant Albemarle's 2017 applications for a one-year extension of time to prove beneficial use of its permitted water rights. In the proceedings below, the district court made the remarkable finding that despite holding a four-day hearing and writing an eight-page document justifying his decision, no reasonable mind would have granted Albemarle the one-year extension of time. This is not a case about whose lithium mining technology is better. This is not a case about whether Albemarle is able to predict the precise date by which it will use the entirety of its appropriation. Rather, this case is about the deference the state engineer is accorded when making a complex scientific finding of fact, like determining whether a lithium mine has demonstrated good faith and reasonable diligence towards perfecting its appropriation. This court should reverse the district court's order granting Pure Energy's petition for judicial review for two reasons. First, the district court erred in ruling that the state engineer applied the incorrect legal standard in reviewing Albemarle's applications for an extension of time. Second, the district court erred in ruling that the state engineer's decision was not supported by substantial evidence, or, in other words, that no reasonable mind would have granted Albemarle the one-year extension of time. To the first point, which is the legal standard for evaluating an application for an extension of time, this is set forth generally in statute. NRS 533.380, subsection 3, governs the state engineer's consideration of these applications. The statute provides that the state engineer may, for good cause shown, grant any number of extensions of time within which water must be applied to the beneficial use for which it was issued. No single extension of time may be issued for more than 5 years, and the state engineer shall not grant an extension of time unless he determines from the proof and evidence submitted with the application that the applicant is proceeding in good faith and with reasonable diligence to perfect the application. Reasonable diligence is defined as the steady application of effort to perfect the application in a reasonably expedient and efficient manner under all facts and circumstances. In the decision on appeal here, the state engineer states multiple times that Albemarle is working towards using the entirety of its 20,000 acre feet annually appropriation. And the state engineer's conclusion states that Albemarle had demonstrated good faith and reasonable diligence towards the perfection of its permits, not just some portion thereof. This is what's required.
Do you think it makes a difference that the application filed by Albemarle, was their first application, even though there had been many extensions granted? This was that entity's first application.
Yeah, it was certainly filed recently after they acquired the mine. I believe they actually filed two in the name of Rockwood Lithium before that. This was the first that was filed in Albemarle's name. But yeah, essentially 3 years after they had acquired the mine, that is a fact and circumstance that the state engineer can consider when looking at whether or not to grant the extension of time. I think the district court kind of categorically held that as a matter of law, the state engineer has to hold the numerous extensions of time filed by the predecessors against the state engineer. I don't think there's any law that would support that. Rather, the state engineer's decision here is exactly what's required based on the statutes and the case law, basically a statement of intent, continuing intent to use the full permitted appropriation, and then outward efforts demonstrating the reasonable diligence to do so. This test upon which, or I guess this rule statement upon which the district court relied, and for which Pure Energy argues that an applicant must show concrete, specific, definite plans. Those are kind of words that are pulled from the various case laws, a case law from this court and from the Supreme Court of Colorado. Concrete is used in Sierra Pacific Industries. It seems like kind of a one-off. I couldn't find cases before or after that really discussing concrete. But definite and specific come from, in the case of definite, essentially the anti-speculation cases. So that would be Bakker, kind of the middle of Bakker, Sierra Pacific Industries, and then the seminal Colorado Supreme Court decision, which is called Colorado River Water Conservation District v. Vidler Tunnel from 1979. These require that you show a definite plan, a contractual relationship with the third-party user, and that the water is committed, that the water is committed to that specific purpose, and then a reasonable expectation that you have the financing to complete the construction of works, and then the ability to put the water to beneficial use. The word specific or specificity, that comes from desert irrigation and the bottom half of Bakker, where in those two very unique situations, which we're not dealing with here, desert irrigation discovered after like 15 years that it had too much water for its housing development, and it wanted to use the balance of its water rights on a property 6 miles away that it had never mentioned in the previous extension of time. This court held that you can't hold on to the excess water.
Right, but let me interrupt you there. What is the state engineer's finding with respect to Pure Energy's expert Dixon with respect to it being impossible to utilize the full 20,000 acre feet AFA? The letter is unclear, and I understand your point that the district judge in this case overread the reference to some quantity of water, but the state engineer didn't appear to reject Dixon's opinion in the letter. And what do we do with that as a reviewing court?
Well, certainly could have been perhaps spelled out a little clearer in the letter. He goes through everything that Pure Energy had submitted, then he talks about how Albemarle's efforts, which this is just one component upon which the state engineer is relying, but Albemarle's efforts to explore the site and to do the PIA was evidence to account for, was progress towards perfecting some quantity of water. And he talks about earlier how it's not uncommon that you're permitted for a number at the outset, and then as you develop the site and expand it the way you would with a lithium mining operation, to the extent that I understand that, sometimes you discover that there's not enough water out there, or you're impacting existing rights, or you're impacting the aquifer. You can't actually reach that full number. And so although it could have been spelled out a little more, the state engineer's letter is rejecting the idea that Albemarle had somehow conceded that it's physically impossible, or Albemarle was not, you know, the desert irrigation situation. It turns out our mine doesn't need 20,000, but let us hang on to the balance so that we can find some other use for that. That's not the situation that we were dealing with here. They were working to expand as they could. I want to be respectful of Mr. Harema's time as well, but if there are any other questions before I perhaps come back for rebuttal.
One quick question. It was cited in the letter in terms of the regulatory delays. Was that kind of the deciding factor?
But yeah, I mean, it's certainly, I think, the a fact and circumstance that was considered. And that's not uncommon, especially with complicating mining operations, the federal and state permitting that the mines have to go through in order to legally drill wells and use the water. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court, Brad Harema on behalf of Albemarle. Corporation and Albemarle U.S. Incorporated. Mr. Cloward has done a good job of setting the table as to what the standard is and how the district court didn't use the proper standard in this case, as well as describing what the substantial evidence or what the standard is for reasonable diligence. Substantial evidence, as Mr. Cloward indicated, is that which a reasonable mind might accept as adequate to support a conclusion. And in this case, when you have a highly technical operation, such as the mining project here, which the state engineer himself found was complex, consisted of lots of different parts, it should be left to the state engineer's discretion here to make these factual determinations. And this is the case, precisely the type of case as described in Wilson versus Pahrump Fairwater, where the discretion should be at its utmost here in terms, the deference, I'm sorry. I wanna highlight three different places where, areas where substantial evidence, three different types of substantial evidence in the record that the state engineer found supported its his finding of reasonable diligence in this case. They are the expansion of Albemarle's well field, the expansion of its pond system, its solar evaporation pond system, as well as the technical work it was undertaking in order to maximize lithium production, which would necessarily also result in maximizing water production. So first, at the time that the extension of time applications were filed, there was what we've referred to as a super permit application being filed. Now, whether or not Albemarle and the state engineer were on the same page as to whether a super permit was appropriate here or well by well permitting was necessary, the fact is that after meetings with the state engineer, Albemarle did file the super permit application. The state engineer's ruling states that the state engineer found that that super permit, had it been granted, would have expanded the amount of water that Albemarle could have pumped through additional wells. And so that finding should be deferred to here. And that is
necessary. Was there a number attached to that? I seem to recall 12,000 acre feet as opposed to. And was there a number?
This was an application looking to allow Albemarle to pump its full 20,000 acre feet. Now, there are numbers that have been used in some of the briefing about an average of 10,000 acre feet by Albemarle. Averages are not important when you're perfecting water rights. It's the year of the highest use. And Mr. Dixon, who is the expert of Pure Energy, he admits in his report, Albemarle's well field and its pond system had been able to use over 12,000 acre feet in 2013. I want to touch briefly, I commented on the fact that the pond expansion was ongoing. There was a plan of operations amendment that would expand the pond system by 840 acres. Mr. Dixon said that would be at least 2,500 acre feet more of water use per year. And finally, there was the geotechnical work and the analysis done by Dr. King in regard to his assistance to Albemarle in locating the best places in the basin to extract lithium and, of course, more water. I want to reserve our time for rebuttal and not go too far here. I just do want to make one last point before I do that, which is the practical impacts of this decision. So if this decision is allowed to stand, you have in this case a lithium operation. It's been owned by Albemarle for 10 years, operating for far longer than that. At the end of 2020, the general counsel in her declaration said there were 64 employees and contractors working there. These are all people. This is the second, the largest private employer in the county. And this is an ongoing operation. This uncertainty created by this decision, not knowing whether the what had been thought of as the gradual or the reasonable diligence, which was a steady effort, reasonable, expedient, and efficient, not being able to rely on that standard throws not only Albemarle, but all permittees into uncertainty, and also would create a situation where the state engineer would not know whether he can sign off on these types of applications by only reviewing what's presented, or if he needs to have this type of four-day hearing on every application. With that, I'd like to reserve the rest of our time, unless you have questions for me.
Thank you.
Afternoon. My name is Paul Taggart. I represent Pure Energy, and I'd like to thank you for the time today. This is a straightforward case that the district judge got right. The owners of the Silver Peak Lithium Mine have had 50 years to use water, and they've only used about 10,000 acre feet a year. Yet they have permits for all the water in Clayton Valley. That's 20,000 acre feet. Another user, my client, wants the unused water for a new, more water efficient, environmentally friendly lithium mining process. The only explanation for Albemarle's fight to keep its stranglehold on 20,000 acre feet is to hoard that water and keep out competition. But Nevada's water law has always prohibited hoarding. Our law has always been use it or lose it. As far back as 1875 in Barnes v. Sabron, this court said that the right to use the public's water should never vest an absolute monopoly in a single individual. This case is a perfect opportunity for the court to clarify that a right to use the public's water and exclude others from that use is a privilege. And to maintain that privilege to use the public's asset, a permittee must have a specific, definite, and concrete plan on how to use all the water that's permitted to get an extension of time. This proof is required because when an application is filed, technical and financial feasibility has to be established in order to get a water right in the first place. That same test should be reproven each time an additional time is granted to hold that water exclusively without using it. That's the burden that Desert Irrigation, Batcher, and Sierra Pacific all created. A mere statement of intent to put water to beneficial use, uncorroborated with actual evidence, is insufficient. And a plan to use some water is not enough to maintain all the water in a permit. That's specifically what this court said in Desert Irrigation. The district court properly found that the state engineer erred when he approved the 21st extension of time without evidence of a plan to use 20,000 acre feet. Affirming the district court will allow development of my client's more water efficient and environmentally friendly lithium mining process and will not limit the current operations of Albemarle's Silver Peak Mine. Pure Energy requests that the court affirm the district court and direct the state engineer to deny the 2017 extension of time and call for a proof of beneficial use on Albemarle's permits.
Mr. Taggart, so the statute that we're dealing with, right, passed by the legislature to govern exactly this kind of application and what the state engineer is supposed to do with it, 533.380, adopts the standard, which is good faith and reasonable diligence. Are you suggesting that there is an additional requirement to get an extension over and above the good faith and reasonable diligence set out in that statute?
No. Good faith and reasonable diligence is determined by understanding what the water right application was granted for to begin with, mm-hmm. and then to judge whether or not progress is being made towards the use of water in that original appropriation.
So is your client's position that Albemarle is not acting in good faith in its application?
Yes. Our position is that not only does the evidence not indicate an action towards using 20,000 acre feet, that they really don't have the intent to use 20,000 acre feet. And they've promised to the state engineer year after year after year after year to expand operations and have never completed the promises that they made to the state engineer.
And is your position that there is not substantial evidence in the record, understanding the legal definition of that term, in the record from which a state engineer could conclude that in fact they are acting in good faith?
Our
because it's a pretty deferential standard of review, as
absolutely.
You know.
Absolutely it is, Your Honor. And there's three points I wanted to cover, and that's the second one. The first one has to do with the DLE technology and how much more efficient it is for water, and that's what we should want in Nevada, and it will allow us to develop lithium without using as much water. With respect to the second point I wanted to make on the standard of review, without reweighing the evidence, this court should conclude that based on this record, there's nothing to show how Albemarle will use 20,000 acre feet. And that's nothing different than this court has done in previous cases, St. Clair, Sierra Pacific, Bakker, and Eureka County. And in each one of those four cases, this court found a missing piece of evidence that made it impossible to include to to uh, to defer to the state engineer and the substantial evidence standard. In St. Clair, there was no evidence of an intent to abandon. In Sierra Pacific, there was no evidence of third-party contracts for water use. In Batcher, there was no detailed statement of the water of the project's water demand. And in Eureka County, there was no mitigation plan. So in each one of those cases, this court applied the substantial evidence review, but did not uphold the state engineer because of something critical that was missing from the set of evidence.
The so same does is true the here. Lack of that evidence of how they will use 20,000 acre feet show a lack of good faith?
Well, the lack, well, it says due diligence and good faith.
So it shows a lack of reasonable diligence?
Yes. What it shows is a lack of reasonable diligence and good faith. If you don't have a plan for how to use the entire amount of water in your appropriation, then you don't have due diligence, you don't have good faith to put that water to beneficial use, to fully protect, to fully perfect the application. So I think it violates both of those concepts. And the reason is that the evidence that we're told simply doesn't get them there. One of the main pieces of evidence that they point to is the testimony of their CEO, Karen Norwal. She was not a person knowledgeable on the way the plant operated. She had statements of intent to use water, nothing different than what Desert Irrigation had, which was mere statements of intent, uncorroborated by actual evidence. The actual evidence could have come from John Mays. John Mays was the person who signed the application for an extension of time. He was not offered as a witness by Albemarle. He signed a sworn affidavit when he filed that application with the state engineer. He did not come to the hearing to explain the plans that Albemarle had. The person who did come was Scott Thibodeau. Scott Thibodeau may have had information about what Albemarle's plans were, but his testimony was found to be unreliable by the state engineer. Albemarle did not challenge that finding in front of the district court. There are two other main witnesses were Wheeler and King. Wheeler testified about operations and maintenance at the plant, not expansion of water use. And Mr. King, who I cross-examined, had a groundwater model that looked at where to find higher concentrations of lithium to essentially generate more lithium from the same amount of water. They were not expansions of water. I asked him that on cross-examination. So none of these witnesses presented an actual plan for how to use 20,000 acre feet. That's why the district court was bothered, because when this case was remanded and there was an opportunity for Albemarle to show a plan for 20,000 acre feet, he expected to see something like doubling the size of the facility. If you can use 10,000 now and you want to use 20,000, where is double the size of the evaporation ponds? Where is double the size of the well field? He didn't see anything like that. He didn't see capital expenditures. He didn't see budgets. He didn't see maps. He didn't see permits, the contracts, the kinds of things you'd expect to see. By contrast, Pure Energy presented evidence, including the expert, Mr. Jay Dixon. In the seminal case on due diligence, Oprah Silver Mining, it says that when you look at due diligence, you look at what individuals engaged in like enterprises would do to expand an operation. Mr. Dixon was the only expert who was qualified on actions necessary to expand water use, and his testimony related to this mine. And it was his testimony that's uncontroverted that it's simply impossible for Albemarle to have the land necessary to build the ponds that would be required to use 20,000 acre feet.
But counsel, wasn't there a holdup that had been there in terms of getting regulatory okays to go forward with certain steps they were attempting to take that would go to that issue?
Yes. Well, Your Honor, there is certainly regulatory compliance involved in every mining project, and it's always part of the process. If a mine had a plan for 20,000 acre feet and they had regulatory approvals in the system for that type of a project, that would be one thing.
But they've been in the system for a while and they've been held up. So it's kind of hard to build your house on something you can't go forward with.
Well, the block permit or super permit that has been discussed was an effort by Albemarle to correct decades of non-compliance with Nevada water law. And for decades, that owner believed they didn't need to comply with Nevada water law at that facility. And that's all. And so what they were trying to do is bring their existing operations into compliance with law. So that regulatory, as I say, if that regulatory approval had been, and we're waiting on a plan to be approved by the BLM for 20,000 acre feet of use, then that would be one thing. But that's not what the regulatory approval they were seeking was. It was to maintain their existing operations.
And shouldn't we be concerned with the fact that the legislature, for whatever reason, chose not to put limits in EOTs?
Well, certainly there's the word any number of extensions of time in the statute, but it also says under the facts and circumstances of a given case. And the question came earlier that from Justice Bell, that this is a new owner. Shouldn't they get a reset? And the answer is no, because that same statute that says any number doesn't say that a new owner gets a reset on they take it as it is. But let's remember that in St. Clair, the court looked at the revival of a water right to see whether or not a new owner can get a reset on what prior owners had done to the water right. And the court said no. That was in the case of an abandonment. Here, when Albemarle acquired the property, they had the ability, because extensions of time are 1 year, so they had the ability to fully submit what was necessary to show an intent to use 20,000 acre feet, and all of the prior years wouldn't make a difference if they had submitted a plan for 20,000 acre feet in their application, but they didn't. And so the number of years should mean something. It can't be dispositive in my view, the number alone, but it should be significant. Looking at 50 years, there's got to be a reason why no one's thought enough to put more money and effort into this mine to use more water than that.
Can I go back earlier when you were talking about good faith and reasonable diligence, and you said that if you could never get to 20,000, you would not be operating in good faith and with reasonable diligence. But don't you think the state engineer in their discretion could say somebody is proceeding in good faith and reasonable diligence, but I'm going to make a finding that you're just not going to get to 20,000 feet and therefore deny an extension?
I think the state engineer could and should have done that here. I think
with that, and I apologize for interrupting, okay. But with that in mind, what do we make of Albemarle and their first extension? They request a five-year extension, and the engineer says, I'm going to give you 1 year to make this showing. It seems to me that there may be an inference there that they're like, I'm not sure that you can get to 20,000. I'm hearing a lot of conflicting evidence. I'm not giving you 5 years. I'm going to give you 1 year. Show me what you got.
Well, it certainly implies the lack of trust that 5 years can go by and activities will be taken, and that may be based upon the previous extensions. We're speculating, I think, on the state engineer's view there. I will also say that the five-year rule is new, and when the state engineer exercises discretion to give 5 years, I think they're still navigating when that's appropriate and when it's not. But I think they definitely give 1 year when they want to see again quickly what's going to happen on this project. So I'm going to give you 1 year instead of two because I want to see you back here next year. Now, there's some questions about deference. This is not a case of the heightened deference that Pahrump Fairwater created. If the state engineer was predicting a well here is going to cause a drawdown over there, that's the type of high deference the state engineer, I think the Pahrump Fairwater case intended the state engineer to have. Here we're talking about how do facts equal a legal standard. So I think this is is a mixed question of fact and law. The state engineer made a finding of fact that all the work Albemarle did resulted in one additional well. That's a finding of fact. Clearly, but whether or not those facts that he found add up to the legal standard, due process or due diligence and good faith, I think is, forgive me, but I think a lawyer is just as good at making that kind of a determination as an engineer.
What do you do with the fact that they come in, and I understand they don't get a complete reset, but they're coming in and we have the one feature rule, so-called, in the statute. And we have an enormously deferential set of standards, reasonable diligence and good faith. I don't know how to measure your expert's affidavit and testimony against the state engineer's determination that those standards were met. I mean, if they bought more land that was adjoining this, would they not be able to put that water to use?
Well,
even consistent with your expert's testimony.
Well, without getting into the facts, I mean, Mr. Dixon's testimony and report is in evidence, and whether they could acquire additional land or not, I don't recall whether that was even possible.
I mean, they're cleaning up their regulatory compliance. Why isn't that one feature that they're doing, and then they're poised to move forward. And under this capacious standard, shouldn't we be deferring to that?
Well, all with all due respect, caution the court against applying the one future rule in this case, only because first the state engineer did not. And so for the state engineer to argue that now would be a post hoc rationalization, re-ray, that can't be done. But even Albemarle didn't argue for the one future rule. But our view is the reason why is before you can apply the one future rule, you have to understand what the entire project is. And we get back to the problem. What is a 20,000 acre foot project? And then we can look at what the features of that project are and see whether they have been proceeded with reasonable diligence. So what to do with Mr. Dixon's testimony? I think your question is spot on because it was unrefuted and it's the kind of testimony.
But it doesn't have to be accepted just because it's unrefuted.
It doesn't.
And there may be limits on it. For example, if they bought the adjoining 1,000 acres, I don't know the land in Esmeralda County, but.
Well, if there's nothing in the record to contest a expert opinion, and the state engineer simply rejects it, that's arbitrary and capricious. That's not that he doesn't have deference to just reject a piece of information that's directly contrary to the decision that he's making and out of hand just say, well, I'm not going to listen to that. He's judged by courts to see whether that was arbitrary and capricious or not. And here, all he said in refuting Mr. Dixon's testimony was, yes, but it shows the use of some water. And that's the problem the judge also had is saying that anywhere in this ruling, whether it was his ultimate decision or not. I mean, look in the ruling, ask the state engineer, where in your ruling does it say and point to the record where 20,000 acre feet is going to get put to use? Show me a schematic, show me a plan, show me where the evaporation ponds are, show me where the well field's going to be. If you pump 10,000 acre feet out of a well field and want to double pumping in that same well field, you're going to have problems. And that's what Mr. Dixon talked about. So there's nowhere in that order where they point to the 20,000 acre foot plan. And so we ask you to remember the public asset of water and the preciousness of that resource. There is no one should be allowed to hoard that public resource to exclude others. And we should make water available in as the most efficient ways that we can. And for those reasons, we respectfully request that you affirm the district court.
One more question. Does the record reflect what water right ownership or competing land ownership or mining claims your client has?
I believe it does. I believe there are maps in Mr. Dixon's report that show the various mining claims in Clayton Valley.
Does it show that your client has any water rights or applications pending?
The record shows that, not Mr. Dixon. I'm not sure that Mr. Dixon's report does, but the record definitely demonstrates that.
Shows that they own water rights or that they have applications pending?
Yes. Yes. The record indicates that my client received a 50-acre-foot water right for a pilot plant and has applications for additional water, 2,500 acre feet, to develop this DLE process.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Are you going to use the whole rebuttal time? Are you guys going to split?
I promised him I'd give him some time, but I don't anticipate that.
Okay.
We'll see how far we get. I'll go as quick as possible. Just a couple points on rebuttal. Justice Pickering, to your question that you just asked, at least in the state engineer's declaration in support of our motion for stay, it talks about how Pure Energy Albemarle have pending applications along with, I believe, four or five other parties. To my knowledge, Pure Energy had a temporary a T finite permit. I that's the water right that they own, but they do have pending applications. This argument that the state engineer, if expert testimony is undisputed, it's arbitrary to not consider it. I mean, that would eliminate the need for a state engineer, and the inverse is concerning. What if an application is filed and there's no protest? Does that mean the state engineer has to forget his professional engineer license, forget his job, and grant it because it's undisputed or because it's uncontested? His entire job is to look at these applications. He is an expert. He doesn't need to be able to point to Mr. Thibodeau's testimony that he ended up not considering in order to reach the decision that he made. And we're in this bizarre procedural posture here, too, because in Albemarle's motion for stay, the state engineer has, as a matter of fact, been proven right. There wasn't a limit on these ponds. Albemarle had, in the intervening years up to district court back to remand, increased its pumping. So we have the situation where the state engineer was correct in rejecting Mr. Dixon's testimony that there was a physical limitation on pumping. Albemarle did, in fact, increase its pumping, and yet we're here in 2025 arguing about whether or not there was substantial evidence to support the decision that's been proven correct. As for the mixed question of law and fact, I do believe that this court could conclude as a matter of law, regulatory compliance or maintenance of operations does not arise to the standard of good faith and reasonable diligence, but there isn't a case where this court has done that. All we have are facts and circumstances. That's what the statute says for the state engineer to consider. So unless this court decides as a matter of law that these categories upon which the state engineer relied do not meet that legal definition, the actual determination that Albemarle had demonstrated good faith and reasonable diligence is a finding of fact to which this court defers, whether to the heightened degree of deference because it's scientific or not, it's still deference. And then I just want to focus back on the Vidler tunnel case from Colorado that clearly spells out intent to use your full appropriation and then outward efforts to do it. That's where all this language came from. And that's where these words that Pure Energy has picked out to kind of invent this new legal standard has come from. And that's what the statutes require. I apologize to Mr. Harima. Happy to answer any other questions.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much to both sides.